I'm Scott Taransky, and this is Joanne Miller, and we have spent our careers helping families. And so our first goal is to do biblical studies and to study the scriptures. I'm a pastor, and so I'm teaching the word on Sundays. And so I'm first trying to get in the Bible, and then we're also studying the family and trying to look for ways that we can apply biblical principles to family life. And so we have we teach parenting seminars across the country almost every week now. Now that our children are grown, we're teaching parenting seminars most every week. We have 85 trained presenters that teach parenting seminars on our behalf that we are working with. We've created video curriculum for helping parents develop their families. We've written children's program. We've written books. We've got audio CDs. We've got Biblical Parenting University launching this month. We've got webinars that people you can listen to me counsel with families as I'm helping them deal with particular problems. And we do those several times a month. So all of those are resources that we can offer you to help make this work. Our primary objective is to help parents understand a heart-based approach to parenting. We developed a number of strategies and techniques in order to make that work, and we're going to apply that in a particular way in this particular session.
We know that all children are different. They have unique struggles, and as we develop strategies to help them, we're going to look beyond just the behavior problems that we see, but go deeper to heart issues and help parents to develop strategies to address heart issues in their children. We know that God is interested in the heart, and certainly as we work with children, we also need to be interested in the heart, but doing it in a very practical way. We can't just be theoretical and talk about what life ought to be like. We need to get very practical with families, give them practical tools to address heart issues.
Now, it doesn't take long when you're working with families to come across some of the special needs and challenges that families face. Special needs Special needs in families fall into a lot of different categories. But the reality is that a child, even though a child has special needs and needs to be dealt with in a particular way, we can still use a heart-based approach because the child has a heart. And so there are certain strategies that we can use to reach that child using a heart-based approach, keeping in mind the unique challenges that that child faces. One broad category of special needs has to do with neurological behavior umbrella. These are things where the brain, neurology, is affecting their behavior. Underneath this umbrella, we'll have things like Asperger's, we'll have autism, we'll have attention deficit disorder. Children who experience those kind of issues in their lives fall on a spectrum. Always there's a spectrum in dealing with these. Some are highly functional, and some are having a very difficult time. What that means is that the issues that are going on in the brain... excuse me. I don't know what's going on. It's just morning. I suppose that's what it is. I'm just starting to talk. The issues that are going on in the brain are affecting these children, some more dramatically than others. Our objective in this particular presentation to you is to help you understand more about attention deficit disorder and then bring a biblical, heart-based approach to that issue to provide you with some resources and tools to help the children and the parents of those children as you're working with them.
There are a variety of different issues that challenge children in this area of neurological behavioral umbrella. And the one in particular we're going to focus on is attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. But I think it's unfortunate that some people will take that group of children and say, oh, that's not a real problem. That's just poor parenting. If those parents did a better job, then these children wouldn't act this way. I think that's unfortunate. I think that's unfortunate for the parents and for the children. We have to realize that there's some real things going on in the child's brain, in the child's body, and we have to help equip these children with some tools and skills so they can manage life. I would suggest that we all have handicaps of one kind or another. We all have struggles, whether they be social or physical or, you know, whatever they are. We're all unique and different. And these children in particular need some help from us to know how to function and to be successful in their environment. So we wanted to say right off the bat, we believe these are real problems and they need some real solutions. And that's what we want to talk about today.
My oldest son, Josh, we started him in public school, had a great Christian teacher, but he was failing kindergarten, wasn't working for him. So we pulled him out of public school and put him into private school. And had a neat Christian teacher. We were very much contributing in the classroom in both the public and the private arena. But after the the January 1st break, he was already not doing well in first grade, wasn't reading. It was just a very difficult experience, and he was having a hard time in class. It was pretty clear that he had attention deficit disorder, so we pulled him out and started homeschooling him. And we had to do things a different way because Josh would not sit and do math facts, timed math tests. He couldn't do those. He was whistling in between. Come on, the clock's running. He didn't care. He would whistle in between. We had him doing his handwriting, laying on the floor. There were a lot of differences in the way he learned and the way he progressed, and so we needed to make some adjustments in the way we worked with him. Now Josh is organizing a university. I mean, this guy is very intelligent, and when he speaks, I take notes. He's a very wise person, and I appreciate what God has done in his life. And he has a son named Hudson. Hudson has attention deficit disorder. So when Hanalei was born, his little sister, she had some oxygen deprivation issues. So when we went into the hospital, she had all the wires. Nothing was seriously wrong, and she recovered fine. It was just, you know, they take all the precautions. So she was in the special nursery with mom, and so at times they let the rest of the family come in, and we all went in there. And we were doing okay, except Hudson was making us all feel tense because it's a place where all the machines are beeping and you've got all this, and he's on the doctor's chair over there spinning around and around. So when I see a child like that and I recognize, and of course we deal with children with attention deficit disorder a lot, it's obvious to see that there's a difference there that's going on. Hudson at rest is very different than Hayden, his brother, at rest. So when it's time to rest and everybody's kind of enjoying some alone time, Hayden's sitting over there working meticulously on a little project in his lap. Hudson is running back and forth from the front door to the dining room, kicking a little bobble thing back and forth. I just said, I'm going to count how many times he does this as he's going back and forth. He's not paying attention to anyone. We're not engaged with anyone. He's just running because that's his rest, back and forth, kicking the little bobble back and forth as he goes. Hudson has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And so we're trying to help him as he's managing those things. At one point, I had a girl in my office. This was a classic picture, and I wish I could have videotaped this for you and shown you, especially for some who question whether this disorder actually exists. Because as I dialogued with this child, who was 8 or 9 years old, she continued to talk to me as she sat on my couch, and eventually, as we continued to dialogue, she was upside down with her head at the bottom, her feet, and we continued to talk as we were going, as if nothing was going on. Here's a child who is just hyperactive and needed to be moving in order for things to happen. That's the particular child we're going to talk about. Let's talk about what's actually happening with the child who has attention deficit disorder or the child who has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. What's going on in the brain is that the synapses in the neurotransmitters, in the synapses of the nerve endings in the brain, are not functioning fluidly or efficiently. So they're getting blocked up a little bit. The electrical charges aren't moving. The chemical transmissions aren't happening easily inside the brain, causing these children to not be able to focus clearly on what's happening. Some of these children then that's the child with attention deficit disorder, having trouble focusing, concentrating, staying on task, remembering more than one instruction at a time, and even staying on that task at a time, because it's hard for them to focus. The child who has the hyperactivity component is the child who's also receiving stimulating messages from the brain to their body that's telling them that in order to feel comfortable, I need to move around a little bit. They're we would say, fidgety. I know that sometimes you feel that way. You just don't feel like you can sit still. You got to move around a little bit. You just got to get up and walk around. These children feel that continually, and so they're moving their hands and sometimes having trouble controlling them as they hit other people, or they move this, or they grab that. And so the impulse control that these children have is very difficult, and that's the hyperactivity component. Many of these children are moving continually in the course of their day.
Now, there are a lot of other things that we see going along with these particular issues that are not true of all these children, but we see it often with this group of children. Things like impulsivity. They act before they think. It just comes out. With the actions, the words, everything is happening, and it's not always passing by the brain. It's just impulsive. These children also sometimes struggle with picking up on social cues then. They're giving out things like activities, but they're not taking in all cues that are going on around them. They're not interpreting the social cues. And so sometimes they act inappropriately because they're not sensing what's going on around them. And so we have to help them with that. These children struggle sometimes with their concept of themselves, and that's a result of a variety of things. Sometimes it's because they realize they don't fit in, they're different from other people. Sometimes it's because they get so much negative attention. They're always being corrected. They feel like they're not measuring up, and other people are telling them that they're not measuring up. So they've got some self-concept issues going on. So there are a variety of different issues that we have to help these children deal with as we're helping them function in their everyday life.
A couple of other side effects that you'll see with children who have attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is anger. That their frustration level is often higher as they're trying to manipulate their world and try to live in the world that they are, that often requires that they fit into certain kind of boundaries. So anger is often a problem that we'll see. Another side effect we see from attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is learning disability. Some of these children have a hard time fitting in a classroom or learning the way other people learn. Those are all side effects. Not necessarily do all children have all of them, but they are present in a number of children, so we're also looking at those kinds of things as well. Now, medication helps many of these children, because when you give a child medication, then what you're doing is you're trying to deal with the organic issue inside the brain that makes the neurotransmitters function more efficiently. So these children, when you give them medication, will often be able to calm down, focus better, and so on. Unfortunately, there's a lot of side effects to medications. Some of those side effects include things like sleeping issues. They include eating issues that children have. They also include things like the child not feeling as good about. Some children really like the energy that they have that's produced by the struggle that they're facing. And when they are on the medication, they don't have that energy, and so it bothers them a little bit. There are other kinds of side effects, but those are the main ones that we see as we're working with children when medication is brought into the picture.
Now, as we work with families, we're not pro-medication or anti-medication. We find that medication is helpful for some children. Some children need to be on medication just so that they can function in their environment, and that's okay. But we would suggest that medication is not the only solution. Medication can be a piece of the solution, but there's a bigger solution and a more complete solution that we want to help families understand. We want to help children develop some skills in their life that's going to help them. Some children will outgrow their need for medication. Sometimes the medication helps them while they're learning some new skills. And so we wouldn't say yes medication, no medication. It may be part of the picture and part of the solution, but it's never the whole solution. It's just a piece.
Let me tell you why medication works in a child's life. There's a threshold that a child has, and that threshold is the point at which, when the problems or their challenges come up from the floor, when they penetrate the threshold, the child either feels overwhelmed or acts out. Okay? Now, what we can do with medication is we can raise the threshold. When we raise that threshold, then the child is able to deal with much of the stimulation in life without acting out or feeling overwhelmed. How many of you drink coffee? Had your cup already, right? I can tell. Some of you are more awake than others. The reason that many of you who drink coffee like to have your first cup of coffee in the morning first thing before anybody else in the house wakes up, including the dog, is because then you're able to meet the challenges of the day. You're a little more alert because coffee has a similar effect. It's also a stimulant and affects your brain, raising your threshold so that you can handle some of the challenges you face in life. Now, medications have a similar, not all exactly like caffeine, but they have a similar effect many times on the brain, and they will allow a child's threshold to be raised. What we're going to do in our approach is something different than raising the threshold using medication. We use a character threshold. We're going to try to raise a child's character threshold by talking about the heart and helping children cope with these challenges that they face, whether they're on medication or not. So as Joanne said, we rarely get involved too much in the medication question. Some of the clients that we work with are on medication, some are not. Our whole approach is an approach that's dealing with the heart and bringing some new strategies to the table to help these children be more effective, and that's part of what we want to share with you.
See, we would suggest that we all have weaknesses in life, and character helps us to overcome and adapt to what needs to happen in our lives. We believe the same thing is true with these children who struggle with ADD or ADHD, that when we bring in some additional character into their lives, they can handle the struggles they're experiencing. Let me give you an example with a character quality of tolerance. Imagine a young man has an irritating sister. She is just annoying. She irritates him all the time. She's always provoking him, and he reacts with anger. If we were to help this young man develop the character quality of tolerance in his life, then we're going to see some improvement in their relationship. She may continue to be irritating, annoying, and provoking, but if he has tolerance in his life, we've raised his character threshold to the point that he can handle it. She's coming at him, and he's not reacting because of tolerance. And so there are several character qualities that our children need that's going to help them handle the things that come at them, handle the struggles, handle the frustrations, handle the impulsivity or the lack of awareness. We're going to develop the character, raising the character threshold in these children, helping them to understand. And so we have to identify specific character qualities that these children need to help them be successful.
Let me tell you a story about that happened last fall. A family called our office and said, the teachers in our school and the school psychologists have recommended that our 9-year-old son be put on medication for attention deficit disorder. We hear that you have a heart-based approach, and we wondered if we could explore some of those ideas. So we said, yes, please bring your son in. Let's explore these ideas for a couple of months. If you'll give us a couple of months to work on some of these strategies, then if they're not working to your satisfaction, then go ahead and try the medication. That's fine. But let's try to work on some of these strategies. So they were eager to come in, and I met first with the parents alone, and we talked to them. I talked to them, explained to them some of the things we're talking about here, talked to them about an approach to work on using a heart-based approach. In particular, in that case, we started with a routine of teaching this child how to follow instructions using a 5-step instruction routine, staying on task, and practicing it. Because in our heart-based approach, we have a number of routines that children can use. So we just started with that one. It's a very positive one because it builds a positive relationship with a child. It breaks down the instruction routine into small pieces. One of the solutions, by the way, for children who have special needs across the spectrum usually need things broken down into smaller pieces. So it's an excellent strategy for starting to build this heart quality that this child needs to attend. So they started working on it. I brought the child in and I modeled this 5-step instruction routine with the child. And parents say, whoa, that was interesting. And so I did that with him right there. I said, you need to practice this, Dad, 20 times a day. Mom, 20 times a day. You need to work on this over and over again and try to do therapy. So what we're suggesting is that children need therapy. But parents are the best therapists for their children if they have a plan. All we're doing is giving them the plan. Okay, so we've got this elaborate plan that we help to develop these heart qualities in children, and we use it for all children, but it's especially helpful for these children who have attention deficit disorder. And so they began working. They came back the next week, and I said, how did it go? And they said, we can't believe the change we've seen in just 1 week working with our son. He's much more peaceable, much more relaxed, and our relationship is much more positive. And so we continued to work. I taught them some correction strategies that we use in our heart-based approach. We worked for 4 weeks to develop some skills and do therapy with their son. It meant some concentrated work in addition to what they're already doing. That's what therapy is. Additional work that needed to be done. And so they continued to do that. After 4 weeks, they were doing very well, and I said to them, how's he doing at school? Because by 4 weeks, we ought to be starting to see some changes at school in the way that he's transferring some of the things he's doing at home to the classroom. And Mom says, well, that's interesting, you should ask. I talked to the teacher yesterday, and she said to me, oh, I see you've put him on medication. Fascinating. What we're saying here is that we can raise the threshold in a child's life using medication, but there are lots of things that parents can do to raise the character threshold in a child's life to bring about significant change in the child. So what we're trying to do is help parents understand what that looks like and put it into practice.
We're talking about changing patterns in a child's life. How do children respond to instructions? If we bring into a child's life a five-step instruction routine. And every time instructions are given, they're given with this five-step routine. And not only just the regular instructions of the day, you know, in the morning to get out the door or after school, but extra instructions throughout the day, 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there, just following instructions, developing these patterns and skills in a child's life, we're going to see some change. We're going to see a development of a responsiveness that the child becomes accustomed to, because this is how we always do it. It's developing a pattern in the child's brain in reality. We're changing the way they naturally respond over time with practice.
Now, there's no objective test for attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity disorder. You can't take a blood test in order to find this. You can't do an MRI or a CAT scan to determine whether a child has attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. We rely on subjective tests, which are observations in the child's life, to determine whether they meet various criteria in order to classify them as being special needs and have this particular problem. What we do is we rely on the reports of parents and teachers as they're looking at children. And so we use those, and they're often very reliable, and they help us determine where a child is in a particular area. The challenge happens is that some children may not have attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, but may have some weaknesses that look like that. So a child who's selfish, for example, or a child who is emotional, or a child who tends to just lack self-control can appear to be a child who has attention deficit disorder. So sometimes the actual problem is misdiagnosed. And so there are situations in which a child may be perceived to have attention deficit disorder, but really has some issues that need to be worked on in his or her life, in maturity issues. He's just developmentally delayed, or he needs some remedial work in order to make that to bring him up to speed. The beauty of our program is that it helps both of those. So if you tell me, I think my child might have attention deficit disorder, I'm thinking about taking him to a doctor to get him classified, I'd say, fine. The classification helps if you're trying to get special services for your child at the school or something like that. So it's helpful because he gets put into a special reading group or whatever, and he gets special services with assistance and so on. But if you're not looking for that, then I would say, you don't need to get him classified. You're the parent. If you see there's a problem there, let's start working with this heart-based approach, because it's going to help children on both sides. If the child has attention deficit disorder, we're going to raise the character threshold to help that child deal with it. If the child doesn't have attention deficit disorder and just has some weaknesses in their character that need to be addressed, this solution is going to help them. So what we're trying to do is give parents a plan that's going to adjust the heart of a child. That's what we're working toward in order to see some significant change.
So it really doesn't matter, as far as we're concerned, and the plan, whether the child is classified or not. It can be helpful for the parent to have some answers of why we're struggling like this. But the real solution becomes character development. And no matter where the child falls on this spectrum, the character is going to help them. And so as parents, we need to understand our child. We need to know what are the weaknesses, what are the character weaknesses that are causing these struggles in my child. And we would suggest that parents are the experts on their child. And as they begin to study their child, they look for patterns of problems. They look for patterns of weaknesses. The parent is the expert on that child. They can develop a plan for that child. This is the weakness area we're seeing. This is the character quality that's going to help with that weakness. And then we can develop a plan to work on that character quality. So parents really become the experts here in the field. They don't have to rely on going to see all these specialists and professionals to get a plan. We can help parents develop those plans as we understand the weaknesses of an individual child.
Let me explain to you what we do in the therapy process with children as parents are working with their kids to develop new patterns of relating. I want to compare it to another brain issue so you understand what's actually happening in the brain when we do this therapy with children, a heart-based approach. If you take a stroke victim and you see that the stroke victim has lost a part of their brain, that is, in a stroke, a certain part of the brain dies. That may be the part of the brain that's managing speech or mobility. What we're going to do with that patient is we're going to help that patient grow by doing some physical therapy, occupational therapy, to help teach that patient how to relearn their ability to walk, to relearn their ability to speak. The brain is an amazing organ, and what we're going to do, in essence, if we could describe it in this crude way, is we're going to build new pathways in the brain of the stroke victim. We're going to bypass the areas that are now dead, and the brain is going to develop some new patterns by practice, develop some new tendencies, the ability to learn some different things. We're going to do the same thing with a child who has attention deficit disorder. Using the therapy that we're suggesting, we're going to build new pathways in the brain that are like grooves. And we're going to go over and over with those grooves to help these children who sometimes are bouncing all over the place to land in these patterns that will guide their processing in the brain. That's the brain. Now let's talk about the heart for a moment. Okay, the heart is a metaphysical concept. The brain is a very physical thing. We can take pictures of it. The heart is a metaphysical concept that we can't take pictures of. But the heart, if we study the scriptures and we ask God, what is the heart? We looked at the every time the word heart is used in the Bible, 750 times that the word heart is used in the Bible. And we ask the question, what is the heart? And we find all kinds of things in related to the heart. But one of the things we find about the heart is that the heart is a wrestling place. Mary pondered all these things in her heart regarding Jesus, you remember, her newborn son. We know that the heart contains desires to go from here to there, wherever. Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. But the heart becomes this wrestling place. It becomes the place where we have tendencies of operating. Jesus said, it's out of the heart that the mouth speaks. You have a tendency to act and to speak coming out of the heart. So what we're going to help children do is we're going to build a strong heart that will produce tendencies that come out of the heart. What a child does when no one is watching or staying over him is a heart issue. Is he going to stay on task or is he going to do something dishonest? That's a tendency that a child has. When a child reacts with anger toward a sibling who's violated his rights or something, that's a tendency, that's a heart issue. So what we're doing is we're going into this place that God created inside of a person that makes him different than an animal, and we're going to make some adjustments and we're going to do some training, some heart training inside of the heart to develop what God calls in Romans chapter 5, we'll get there in a minute, character. And we're going to develop some heart qualities inside of a child that will allow them to cope with the challenges of life. Now, this is valuable for any child at any time. They need to develop heart qualities to manage life. But we're trying to apply this specifically to the problem of attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
So we may be looking for a heart quality of responsiveness to authority. Or we may be looking for a heart quality of self-control or thoughtfulness of others. We want to develop tendencies in a child's life so they get outside of their natural responses and develop patterns of responsiveness to others, patterns of thoughtfulness, patterns of self-control, patterns of looking at staying on task, thoroughness, different qualities that our children need. We want to develop those patterns, and they're going to develop over time with this therapy that we're talking about.
We're using a heart-brain connection here to help children with attention deficit disorder. We're not ignoring the fact that they've got a brain situation going on, but we're using the heart as God has created that in every person to help them cope with the issues that they're facing. And we believe it actually changes what's going on in the brain to help children make some significant changes. So the solution is let's go to the heart and let's try to help children make some significant heart changes. Now, in order to develop a plan to move forward here, we have to start with this whole concept of hope. The child with attention deficit disorder is a magnet for correction, as you might imagine. Would you cut it out? Stop doing that. We say that to these children over and over and over again. And so because they're a magnet for correction, often they feel discouraged. They're like, this is hopeless. I'm never going to get anywhere. I am destined to be a magnet for correction forever. And so one of the key ingredients we need to give these children and young people is hope.
So we want to look at the scriptures and find out, where does hope come from? How does a person develop hope in their life? Because God has a prescription for hope. We want to understand that because that's going to be a very important part of the plan that we develop for a child.
So we look at Romans chapter 5, verses 3 and 4 to help us understand the plan. And this is where we're going to put our plan into this whole prescription that God has for hope. Romans 5, 3 and 4 says, suffering produces perseverance. perseverance, character, and character, hope. Now, you can only control one of those words. The suffering comes into our lives. The character is a result. The hope is a byproduct. The one you can control is perseverance. What we're going to do is we're going to take our plan, our heart-based plan that we've developed that has a lot of different pieces, and we're going to slide it right in there into this Bible passage about character development and hope development. We're going to use this plan as the perseverance part of this whole equation in order for children to learn how to respond to their suffering more appropriately. So that's what we're doing, is we're sliding this into this area of perseverance.
So the suffering leads to perseverance, to character, and hope. The suffering is where it starts. I don't know about you, but I don't like to see kids suffer. And I think that's part of the problem often. As we're working with children, we try and excuse them. We try and remove the suffering from their life. We try and make life easier for them because we don't like to see them suffer. And yet God says that suffering is an important part of the plan. So we need to understand this idea of suffering. I think as adults we realize when we go through hard times in life, it makes us stronger, it makes us better people, we understand faith a little more, we rely on the Lord more. And so we can see the benefit of suffering in our own lives and how God can use that. But we would suggest that God also uses suffering in a child's life if they know how to respond to it. And that's where that perseverance part becomes very important. What does it mean to persevere in suffering? What is the suffering in a child's life? And what is the perseverance going to look like?
So that suffering may come naturally in their environment, where the child, the suffering can be defined as the internal desire to, or the promptings, physical promptings, to run, and this child really needs to learn how to calm down and not run or have self-control in that particular moment. The suffering could be an annoyance that's out there, and the child needs to learn how to ignore it instead of responding to it. The suffering could be the tendency to want to talk and talk and talk, but have to be quiet. All of those could be the internal suffering that the child's experiencing. But sometimes what we have to do as we're training children is we as parents provide the suffering for our children. We're not saying be mean to your kids. What we're saying is, okay, you are going to have to fit into this constraint here. That's going to be the suffering for you. We're not trying to be mean to them, but we are saying that in order for you to grow and work the plan, you need a little bit of pressure. So we're going to put some pressure on you to move forward, and we're going to give you a plan. But please, don't just go home and put pressure on your kids. That's not what we're saying here. You're not just trying to increase their suffering. You're only doing that when you give them a plan. I want to define perseverance for you, what perseverance means. And this is, I define perseverance not only for the child who has attention deficit disorder, but also for all children. In fact, all adults need to persevere in their lives. And perseverance can be defined this way: learning how to think differently, learning how to act differently, and learning how to trust God in the difference. That's what perseverance is: learning how to think differently, learning how to act differently, and learning how to trust God in the difference. And your job as a parent, if we're talking to parents here, or an equipper as you're trying to help parents do this, is to give children a plan. You must give them a plan before you put the pressure on, so that children know exactly what they're supposed to be doing. We are telling them sometimes the exact words to use when the brother offends them. We're telling them the exact actions they should take. What should they do with their hands when they're tempted to reach out and touch that other child inappropriately? We're telling them exactly what to do. That's what it means: how to think differently, how to act differently, and how to trust God in the difference. So we're going to use perseverance as a primary tool here. That's where our plan's going to go in order to deal with the suffering. Now, as you're developing the suffering, you're adding structure to a child's life. The structure is going to force them further and further to developing the plans that they need, and that's going to result in the character development in a child's life. They're going to start developing character qualities like self-control, like sensitivity. A child with self-control and sensitivity can be more socially appropriate. We're going to teach them those kind of things as we're moving through. We're going to teach them a quality like responsibility. Responsibility we might define for a child who has attention deficit disorder: staying on task without being reminded. It's a simple definition. It's only one piece of responsibility. But we're focusing on character. We're using suffering. We're using a plan, perseverance, to move forward. And these children then experience hope in their lives.
So then the suffering becomes the opportunity to practice the plan. We're going to talk about a plan so a child knows exactly what we expect of them, how they can respond to that suffering, and then when the suffering comes, they've got opportunity to practice, and we may even increase the suffering in the child's life so they have more opportunity to practice. And then over time, we're developing some new skills, some new patterns, some new pathways in the brain that the child, it will become more natural for them to respond that way.
Now, every child needs a unique plan. You can't just take the Josh plan from my son as he was growing up and say, okay, here, do this. Because Josh, my son Josh, had some unique ways in which his disability affected his life. So we developed a particular plan for Josh. Hudson needs a different plan. And I'll share with you some ideas for Hudson. But you're going to have to take the child and develop unique solutions for that particular child. Every child is unique, and we need to think about that in those terms. So with Hudson, one of the things that we, that is, I'm only involved in his life as a grandpa, so his parents are doing the primary work in his life, but when I was there with him in the room with the medical equipment all around, there are several things that I'm saying to Hudson along the way. One of them is, manage your energy. Okay, because he's got this energy, and he needs to see that his energy is getting outside the bounds. So I would say to him, oh, manage your energy. And that's the signal for him to be conscious of how his energy is affecting other people around. Another thing I would say is a quiet voice. So that notice that my words with him are positive. Instead of saying, would you cut it out? Would you stop? You're going to break the equipment around here. You see you're bothering everybody around here? Okay, parents often spend their time focused on point A. We've got to get to point B. I'm trying to focus on point B by the comments that I'm making to Hudson as we're moving forward. Hudson tended to get angry when he got a no answer. He just was overwhelmed. And he would throw himself on the ground and be upset about that. Well, over the time now, parents have used a break concept. A break is a jargon. It's some term that we use in our heart-based approach that describes a child pulling back, settling down, and willing to work on the problem. And it is a technique we use across the board as we're correcting children. But they've used this, with Hudson, because dad now says to him, and mom too, I think you better put yourself in a break here. So instead of parents saying, you need to go take a break, now they're saying, you want to be self-managed in this, I think it's time to go take a break. Put yourself in a break. And so he'll go and he'll just sit down for a moment and he'll calm down. That takes therapy, it takes work. He didn't do that at first because he didn't want to go take a break because children with high energy don't want to take a break. They want to keep using it. And so they had to do some work to train him. So now when they say, I think you should put yourself in a break, he'll go and he'll do that. That's all part of the therapy for Hudson to teach him how to manage the things that are going on inside of him.
I think the words we say to a child are very important. Of course, we all recognize that, that the things that we're repeating over and over again are the things that they begin repeating to themselves. So I think we need to be careful with these children because we may have a tendency to be responding with negative words. But I really like the way Scott has framed so often the positive things we want. Slow motion, quiet voice, manage your energy. Those are phrases we want children to be saying to themselves. I need to manage my energy. I need to go slow motion. I need to slow it down. The things that we can say to ourselves, our children can say to themselves, those are the phrases we want to be using with our kids. So I think it just takes some time for us as adults to think, what do I want this child saying to themselves at this moment? What are the words I want repeated in that child's mind at this moment? Those are the things we start saying to them as part of the plan.
All right, let me help you understand how we develop a plan, because a good plan that we're working on with this unique child, in order to decipher what's going to be in the plan for this child, we're going to ask five different questions. We're going to look at five different parts of the plan. And usually, helping a child who has attention deficit disorder or a host of other issues requires a multifaceted approach, a multifaceted plan. The first part of this plan is firmness. So what we're going to do is we're going to establish some guidelines and boundaries. I want to distinguish the difference between firmness and harshness. Harshness uses emotional energy on the part of the parent to communicate, I mean business. Harshness is usually damaging to a child. It's damaging because a child who is yelled at often then receives a message that I'm unworthy, unloved, and unacceptable. When a child is yelled at, that's the message they receive. Furthermore, the yelling produces distance in the relationship between parent and child, and yelling hurts the parent because the parent goes away thinking, oh, I shouldn't have done that, because it's a conscience issue, and we know that we shouldn't have handled it that way. So in those three areas, the parent, the relationship, and the child, yelling is unproductive. Harshness is usually unproductive in a parent-child relationship. But firmness is essential because firmness contributes to character development. Firmness is the pressure we're going to put on. It's the suffering we talked about in our equation of suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. So we need to have some firmness that says we're not going to live this way anymore. We're going to make some changes. Whoop, you need to stop there. You need to take a break. We're going to have to practice doing this. That's all the firmness. It's a very important part of the plan. And so you're going to ask some questions. What is firmness going to look like here? What am I going to do here to motivate this child to feel uncomfortable at point A?
See, the firmness provides the structure. This is what we're going to do. It's the practice sessions. That firmness becomes very important to give the child direction and what's acceptable and what's not and how we're going to live. But another part of this plan is visioning. Visioning says, why are we doing this? Visioning talks about the benefits of working on this problem. Visioning says, this is going to be really great for you as you get older. You're going to really enjoy relationships more when you learn to do this. You're going to have a better time at that play date because we've worked on this in your life. You're going to have a better time at school. This is going to really benefit you as you work on this. So the visioning becomes an important part of the plan as well.
And you'll feel better about yourself and other people and your relationships with others when you are doing this. So we're trying to help you develop this heart quality in your life. Usually we'll define what the heart quality is for a child. If we were to look at this on a map, we would say the child now, right now, is at point A on the map. Point A means that the child is lacking a particular heart quality, and we're trying to move that child over here to point B on the map. That's where we're going. Point B is the positive quality we're trying to develop. Self-control, sensitivity, tolerance, responsiveness to authority, responsibility. Those are the heart qualities we're working on. What we're saying is we're going to move from point A to point B, and at point B we're going to be doing some visioning to talk about why is point B so helpful anyway. I find that most parents spend a lot of time on point A. Would you cut it out? Stop doing that. Do you see what this is doing? Oh, you're never going to amount to anything and other things like that, all right? We're saying, let's talk about point B. That's what we're trying to get our child to move toward. So the words that we choose in our discipline process, in the training process, are words that focus on point B.
I think just defining point B can be really helpful as we're working with children. We don't want to just talk about what we don't like at point A. We want to talk about what is point B anyway. We want to decide in our own minds, what is the solution here? What's point B going to look like? And then talk about the benefits of point B with the child so they now know why we're working on this problem.
All right, so we've got firmness, we've got visioning. Another very key component in this whole process of developing a plan is prayer. It's a very practical strategy. First of all, James says that if we lack wisdom, we ask God, who gives to us liberally, and we need it liberally, especially when we're dealing with a child who has challenges. But we're praying for four things. One, we're praying that God will give me as the parent self-control today as I work with this particular child. Because how often do we lose it with this child and do something counterproductive? So we're saying is I need help as a parent, as I'm working with this child. Lord, it's morning. And I'm praying, Lord, that you'll give me the wisdom and guidance today to work with Billy in this particular challenge. So I'm praying for myself. Second thing we're praying for is we're praying that God will change the child's heart, because the scriptures don't talk about parents changing children's hearts, okay? We have an influence on children's hearts, but the idea of repentance and a change of heart happens when either the person changes their own heart, we see in scripture, or God changes a person's heart. And so we're praying that God would do that work. When we have a heart-based approach, we're partnering with a God of the universe to work with these children. We're praying that God will do this deeper work. So that's the second thing we're praying for. The third thing we're praying for is light bulb moments in the life of the child. That the child will, oh yes, I got it. And we are so delighted as parents when we see that the child gets it and they respond to it, because we've been doing it over and over and over again. We're building the grooves in the brain over and over again, and the child gets it. We go, yes! We're praying for those moments. And the fourth thing we're praying for is relational connectedness. Relational connectedness. Because we're going to be putting pressure in this child's life to do therapy with them. In order to put pressure on a person's life, they also need relationship, because children can only take as much pressure as the relationship allows. Otherwise, you end up with defiance and rebellion and all kinds of things. So we want relational connectedness. You know, the playing together, teasing sometimes, the tickling, the reading a story together, the having engaging in conversation. That's relational connectedness. We want that as we're trying to work forward on this whole plan.
I think sometimes parents fall into the trap of going to all the books, all the specialists, trying to find out about their child and how to work with this particular child. But they forget that God knows their child the best. God is the expert on each one of our children. And so we've got to be going to God for wisdom, recognizing that this is God's plan we're putting into practice, that God can help us be sensitive to the what we need to do today. It is not easy to be a parent. When am I supposed to be firm? When am I supposed to exhibit grace for the child? How do I put it all together here for the child? But God helps us to have insight into the child's life. What does my child need from me right now? A very important question. And God, when we're praying, we're partnering with the God of the universe to work in a child's life. I mean, what greater privilege do we have than to be praying for this child, praying for ourselves every day as we're trying to help a child make some changes?
Very important part of the plan. A fourth part of the plan is teaching. When we say teaching, visioning deals with why, okay? Why are we doing this? Teaching deals with how. We're telling children the exact words to use sometimes. Instead of hitting, I want you to say, I don't like that. Once we practice, go ahead. Say, I don't like that. I don't like this. We're telling the exact words to use sometimes. We're telling them what actions that they're going to take. We're going to tell them how to think. We're going to give them clear guidelines about the how to get them from point A to point B. How do you be kind to your sister? How do you pay attention when you're in a classroom environment? How do you respond when you feel like you should go out and run, but you can't at the moment? How do you think about that? We're teaching children how. Very important that we're going right through this, and every child's different. So we're spending a lot of time teaching them how. That's the very important part of the plan.
And the how needs to be very practical. We can't tell a child just to be more sensitive to others. What does that mean? It means to, when you walk into a room, to look and listen before you speak. We want to be very practical with the how part. Sometimes we think that our children know how to do it, they're just not doing it. Often they don't know how. And so we've got to break it down into little pieces for them. What are we expecting the child to be thinking, to be saying, to be doing? What does that look like? So the how is very important.
Just as a parenthesis, you have to understand, as we teach parents, parents need this too. They need it broken down into small pieces, and they need to know how. They can't just say, oh, be more consistent with your kids, or be kind. I mean, you've got to tell them, here's how you parent. And so that's our resources are very practical, giving you specific strategies about how to accomplish what you're trying to do to develop this heart-based approach to parenting with your children. So how is modeled by this idea of teaching. And then the fifth part of your component is coaching. Coaching attitude is very important. It's different than a referee. Okay, a coach is helping to make a person better and move forward. A referee's job is to find infractions of the rules and point them out. Okay, that's the difference between a referee and a coach. Many parents are like a referee in a hockey game. Oh, infraction, 5 minutes in the penalty box. You know, instead of being the coach says, whoop, that was a mistake there. Why don't you try that again? Come on, we can do that. All right, let's go. Let's move forward here. That's good. You did the right thing. And we're coaching the child from point A to point B in order to get where we need. The child who has a special need needs a lot of coaching. What we're doing with a child who has attention deficit disorder is we're coaching them along. So that means continual reminders. The difference between coaching and nagging has to do with harshness. Okay, so you're going to want to be coaching along. Choose your words. You're focusing on the positive instead of focusing on the negative. You're coaching your child to get from point A to point B.
Coaching is an action, but it's also an attitude. You want to have the attitude of a coach. The coach believes in his athlete or her athlete. The coach says, we're going to do this. We're going to help you be successful here. Let's work on this together. I'm here for you. Come on, let's make it happen. That's a coaching attitude that we want to have with these kids. I think sometimes parents have a policeman attitude. We want to have a coaching attitude. And so getting our hearts right as adults as we relate to this child is very important.
Now, this plan with five different parts is what we use as we're working with a specific child. So what we'll do is we'll list these five words on the page, and then we'll look for specific things we can put in place of each of those parts in order to make this plan work. You're generally going to need lots of strategies as you're moving forward with a child who has attention deficit disorder. So we're working forward with a lot of pieces in order to help them develop the skills and the character necessary to move forward. Time becomes really important in this whole process. You just have to understand that time is either going to be your ally or your enemy. Okay? Let me explain to you what I mean by that. When we say that time is your enemy, what we're saying is if a child, let's say imagine a child breaks his leg, okay, his leg's out of place there. Time is your enemy because the leg isn't set. It's starting to heal right away. It's healing in the wrong place. And so what we need to do is get that child to the physician where the leg can be set, casted, and then you need time because time is now your ally. Time, when you have a cast on a leg, the leg needs time to heal. Okay? The same thing is true with your plan. If you have a good plan, you're going to need time to develop this plan. It's going to take a long time to help a child develop godly character in their lives using the things that we're saying here. The heart-based approach that we have isn't necessarily easier. You can use behavior modification to get kids in the car. You can use yelling to get kids to stop being wild in the house. So there's a lot of techniques that might work faster, but a heart-based approach is one that's developing the internal strength inside of a person to be successful in life. It takes time. But some parents will say, well, I'm just going to... He's just going through a phase. Or he'll grow out of this. Well, maybe he will. But the problem is that if you're just assuming that's going to take place, then you're allowing time maybe to be your enemy because children are developing patterns and setting their lives, their hearts, in a way that's counterproductive for them. So what we're trying to do is move them in the right direction in order to produce this hope inside of children to help them to move forward.
Sometimes parents want fast solutions, immediate solutions. A heart-based approach takes time. But hopefully that's also encouraging for the parent because we're not looking for success in the moment. We're looking for long-term success, for long-term skills, long-term heart quality. It takes time to develop, but they're lasting skills then. We're preparing children for adulthood. We're not just trying to get through the day. We're looking down the road. What does my child need to be successful as an adult? How are we going to work in this child's life now so that we can move the child a little further along the way? It's actually a very hopeful approach for parents because we're not measuring success at the end of every day, but we're looking long-term. We're looking for steps in progress in the right direction.
Some well-meaning teachers will say, you got to work with your kids by the time they're 5 years old because their self-esteem is established by then, okay? I think it's really important to work with your children when they're young, but what if they're six? Is it too late? There's some well-meaning teachers who say, you got to work with your kids by the time they're 12 years old to establish a value system because they're heading into the teens, they need that value system. Well, I think it's really important to help pre-adolescents develop a value system, but what if they're 13? Is it too late? See, that's a very humanistic view of child development, but I believe in a God who changes people at any age. He changes the 5-year-old, the 6-year-old, the 12-year-old, the 13-year-old, the 20-year-old, the 30-year-old, the 40-year-old, and by God's grace, the 53-year-old like me. God is in the business of changing people, right? And where does God like to work? In the heart of a person. See, I think there's a paradigm shift that's needed in our families today. I think many parents have bought into the behavior modification. I think many teachers are trained that way in school, that they're using behavior modification to adjust children's behavior. We're bringing a whole new category, we call it a bucket, of resources to the table. Animals are trained using behavior modification, and it works with people too. But people are different than animals. People have a heart. And because a person has a heart, that means we have a whole other resource, bucket of resources that we can bring to the table. Many parents don't understand what this is. Many parents, when they come to our parenting seminars that we teach, are looking for a quick idea here, a quick idea there, in order to make some changes. And we try to give them quick ideas. But it's not long before they learn that this is a culture shift. This is a different way of thinking. And that the little pieces that we have don't work just because they're a little new technique. They work because we're focused in a different area of a child's life. We're looking at the heart. When we work with children who have attention deficit disorder using a heart-based approach, we're bringing alongside any other tools that you may use, whether it be behavior modification, or it may be a special needs classroom, or it may be medication. It could be a whole host of different things that you're using there in order to move children forward. But what we're saying is there's this other basket of resources that we believe God has designed in His Word for us to take advantage of, and we're trying to bring those to the table. You remember the story about Samuel. The Samuel was sent by God to go down to Bethlehem, to the home of Jesse, to anoint a king, but he wasn't told who it would be. And so Samuel goes down there, and he starts waiting around for God to tell him who it's going to be, but he already knows. He says, I can tell who it's going to be. It's going to be Eliab. I can tell. He's strong. He's tall. He's handsome. Kind of reminds me of the last king, King Saul. But in that moment, God changed the paradigm for Samuel because he spoke into those words and he said those famous words. He said to him, man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. And that's the paradigm shift we're trying to bring to families all over the place to try to help them understand what a heart-based approach to parenting looks like. All right, you have an evaluation form in your packet. If you would do us a favor and pull out your evaluation form and fill it out and tell us about your experience here, we would like to hear what you have to say. We read all of those. At the bottom of the evaluation form, you'll see you can sign up for free email parenting tips. They come into your inbox a couple times a week, and you can use them for ministry. Pass them out to other folks. Use them in your bulletins, on your website, on your blog, in your newsletters, email newsletters. Any way you want to use them, you're welcome to do that. We encourage you to use them, but if you sign your email address down there, we'll sign you up for those. All right, so while you're filling those out, if somebody has a question, we can take we have 5 more minutes, so we have a couple of questions. Yes, sir. Okay, preschoolers are learning 2 primary heart qualities, self-control and responsiveness to authority, different than what we were learning in infancy. In infancy, the heart qualities we're emphasizing are trust that the world's, and the belief that the world's a safe place to be in. Okay, so we're really developing some bonding and some trust issues in the early ages, but by the time the child turns preschool age, we're developing some new heart qualities in them. Now, we're going to start with self-control and responsiveness to authority, but we're going to add other ones to that depending on the uniqueness of the child. We're going to work heavily on this. We would suggest that you use an instruction routine, that you practice giving instructions. If you want help with an instruction routine, we have taken it apart, 5 parts for the parent, 5 parts for the child, and we've tried to script this, and it works great for parents who often struggle with how to give instructions to their children. We'd suggest you start there, but if you already know how to give instructions and you do that pretty well, then just practice giving instructions and expecting children to respond because you're building into them responsiveness to authority. So I would start with that as a therapy technique. Yes, ma'am. Okay. You have a sliver of influence in the life of a child. You also have a sliver of influence in the life of that parent, sometimes greater than others. I'm a grandfather. I have a little bit more influence in the life of Hudson's parents and on the life of Hudson. The key is you get to use whatever sliver of influence you have in the life of that family. That is your responsibility. You can't take control over the whole thing, but you may be able to increase your influence in that child's life by doing several things. One is, I would say, talking to the parent and trying to present them with some more tools, resources to help their children. Because some children think, oh, my child has attention deficit disorder. This is a medical condition. I'll give him medication. That'll solve the problem. When there's a lot more that could be done. But I think also, since you have a relationship with that child, obviously we're praying for that child. We're also giving that child hope. We're talking about what God is doing in that child's life. And we're trying to help that child see that God can use his uniqueness in some powerful ways. He's been given a gift of energy. So you use whatever influence that you have. That's God's gift to you, is the influence in this family's life. And that's what you focus on, using as much of these tools as you can in the life of both parents and children. Yes, ma'am. Okay, keep the child near you. Okay, so here's what I do. I teach parenting seminars. Sometimes we invite children up on the stage. I'll have 20 children come up on the stage at the same time. Invariably, I'll have a child with attention deficit disorder. You know, because he bounds in, goes to his mom first, then comes running up. Okay, and I say, well, that's my kid. And she walks up on the stage. I say, welcome, what's your name? I'll say to him, Johnny. I say, Johnny, great. Why don't you come and sit right over here? Because, see, I don't want to be correcting Johnny from across the room. I want to put my hands on Johnny. And a lot of times, having Johnny right next to me, being my helper and working with him, helps him to feel the hope and be a part of the solution instead of being the focus of correction. So I would say one of the greatest things we can do in the classroom is we take the child who tends to be disruptive in any of these different areas and we keep them close to us so that we can use physical touch as well as our words sometimes to help them along the way.